brutal, brutal.
TV Talk Machine.
A podcast about television.
It is a podcast about television, and it's distributed worldwide simultaneously. I'm Jason Snell. I do the distribution, and across the internet, it's his talk machine. It's Tim Goodman of The Hollywood Reporter. Hello.
Hello, Jason. I do the talking.
Yes. I can be the machine. Am I the machine? Is that how this works?
I'll be the machine. I'm the bastard machine.
Oh, yeah. You're a talking machine.
I'm a talking machine.
And the bastard machine.
Yeah, TV talk machine.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. Well, we're here. I play the old logo, or the old theme song, because why not?
I love it, because I just like brutal.
Yeah, that's right. Actual clip from...
Actual clip.
From actual podcast. So we are back on a slightly different day, because I'm going to be going to Giants opening day tomorrow, and I'm not going to be working there.
Speaking of brutal...
I'm going to get rained on. I'm going to have to bring, like, a rain pants, so I don't get my whole, you know, underpants soaked with rainwater by the time it's the ninth inning.
I love that you're doing it. That gives me, I love that. I love that you're doing it, but yes. Bleak year for our team.
Yeah, rough year. And, what better way to start it, at home than with, interminable rain delays and soaking.
Yes. And in a 2-5 hole, that's going to be good for you. Fun times.
Yep. It's all good. But we should get to television.
Let's do it.
Which is not baseball related, because worldwide, the people who receive this simultaneously worldwide don't want to hear about baseball.
Not
I suspect.
All the time. That's for sure.
They probably don't want to silly Americans with our silly game. But I do want to talk about some of the things that you've written. Killing Eve is back on BBC America in a few days with season 2. And that's a really great show. One of the great surprises, new things of the last year, I think. So, how is season 2?
It's great. I'm super excited about it because two things happened. One, all it really needed to do was not drop the ball that it carried so elegantly and funnily last year, and how thrilling the season was and how quirky it was, and it didn't. I did laugh that BBC America, which usually is like, would you like all the episodes? Would you like next season's early episodes? Sure. All got a hit on their hands. Like, here's two. You get two episodes. So, you know, they get a little taste of a hit and they're like, you can only have two. But it's fine. I thought the two episodes, if you can judge the whole thing from that, they did a great job. It and the tone is absolutely what you think it will be. More importantly to me, the very first two episodes are very, very Villanelle-centric, and that lets Jodie Comer really shine. And as I wrote in my review, it's proof positive that, like, you know, you got, anybody who didn't nominate her for these things has totally blown it. She's so good in these first two episodes. And, yeah, it's fun. Like, to me, the litmus test, and I put that in there, too, is, like, when you finish the first episode, do you immediately want to devour the next one? And I did.
That's good. That's good to hear. It's a good show. So the two episodes you got were good, and that's all right. That's all. And the show is great. It's a great show. So I guess need we say more? People should check it out. I think maybe they're running season 1 on AMC or something in advance of this. So people should.
I'm sure they are.
Check that out. We might have even mentioned that last week. I don't even remember what I'm talking about now. But it's you should go. Yeah, and it's on Hulu right now too. If you've got Hulu, you can watch it there. Season 1 of Killing.
Yeah, and the big twist for season 2. I mean, not for plot wise, but for airing wise, is that instead of just BBC America, they're going to run it on AMC simultaneously. So all season, not just like one as a special runoff.
So if you have like no HD BBC America or even no BBC America, you'll be able to get it because you'll be able to watch it on AMC.
Absolutely.
Which works too. All right. Let's move on to The Twilight Zone. We should mention that. You did not like it.
Oh.
Yeah.
It's... Well, as I said in the review, the first two episodes are terrible, which is shocking. The next two episodes are bad, and that puts the whole concept. I mean, if you look at expectations, because Jordan Peele was, you know, he's the centerpiece of it and the executive producer, but, you know, very key to the process, does not write or direct any of the first four episodes. Every other actor in Hollywood is involved in this project, and so expectations were really high. So I think putting those things together, this is one of the biggest fails I've seen. It's terrible. It's kind of mind-numbing, like how bad it is. Like, it's just really limp. I think you can't first of all, you can't launch a streaming service like CBS All Access, which this is on, with shows like this. You just can't. I mean, maybe if you're a CBS person, let's just say that your profile fits, that you like a lot of CBS shows, you're going to have no problem at all with Twilight Zone. But if you're coming to CBS All Access as somebody who really likes shows from a variety of different channels that are a little more aggressive, ambitious, and quality driven, you're going to be sorely, sorely let down about how weak these episodes are. It's they are bloated. They are kind of pointless. They are badly written. And they don't have any shocks or surprises that either you don't see coming or sometimes just don't even arrive. And it leaves I kept watching the episodes because I kept saying, oh, it has to get better. And if it doesn't get better, oh, my God, I can't wait to see another one to see how deep this mess is. And it's pretty deep.
Yeah, it's an anthology, so you could always have hope that the next one will be okay. But if you watch the four that they sent to critics to sample and they're bad, that's a bad sign.
Yeah, and I think, and again, we talk about this, time is everybody's currency. That's their most precious currency. And when the first two ones are like literally terrible, I don't know how anybody would even want to go to a third unless they've already paid for it, or maybe they have the free profile or the free like months. You know, I think CBS Ox is still doing that promo where you get a week for free or something. You can burn through them pretty quick to find out that's not a show you want to watch.
Yikes. Mm-hmm. All right, let's move on. You got some critics' notebook pieces that we should at least mention. Game of Thrones is back. It's kind of hard to believe it is back week after next, a week from Sunday. Mm-hmm. And you wrote a piece that is your, you know, give a little salute to Game of Thrones as it returns for its final season, that it will be in the conversation as one of the all-time great dramas. And then you also say, like, there are very few genre shows, and especially very few fantasy, sci-fi fantasy shows that are even in the conversation of being among the great dramas, and here's Game of Thrones. And you and I have talked about it a bunch, but like, yeah, and I'm with you. I think this is not just a great fantasy epic. It is one of the great TV dramas of our time, if not all time.
Yeah, and I was excited to write this and sort of, you know, get out in front of it and put this out there. It's, you know, thoughts that have been forming for a while, but it was such an interesting, I think, exercise. You and I have done this before, and my girlfriend's a total super nerd about all kinds of sci-fi and fantasy shows and anything that's, you know, of that realm. And she was absolutely, cause I was like, okay, help me. Am I wrong here? I was like, here's the three that I would consider genre series, you know, outside of Deadwood, which I explain as a Western, which is kind of a cheat as a genre.
Then you might as well take the Americans and say it's a spy show. And that's a genre too.
And that's a genre, right?
I it's not what you're getting at. Basically.
No, it's not what I was getting at. I wanted to cover my ass on that one for sure, because it certainly fits in the all time classics. But, you know, as something that's like fantasy or sci-fi driven, or let's just say paranormal, as I mentioned on here, I was like, am I wrong? Here's the three that I would say are, you can argue that these are great series. You could put them in the top 25 list, maybe, if you want to. But nothing is going to crack that top 10. And, you know, going through the list and thinking about a lot of stuff, It just tells you how hard it is, Jason, to any drama to get to where you're in consideration for a top five Hall of Fame slot, as I like to say, or a top 10 best all time dramas, where everybody can just argue until the blood spills all over the floor. But it's so much harder to do that if you're a genre series, and because you just don't. And I think I detail in here some of the reasons down below why people who are not quote unquote sci-fi fans are. They will look askance at a show like this, and they will be ultra critical of all parts of it, and they just won't consider it. And that has historically been the case, and I think that's why the achievement that Game of Thrones is upon right now, even before it ends, is so compelling and so amazing that they got this far. They are a genre series that's got all kinds of crazy elements to it, fantasy elements. You know, you've got magical animals, you've got dragons, you've got giants, you've got all kinds of things. And yet it still has enough gravitas to really be considered without an argument in certainly in the top 10, And I'm sure some people will put it in the top five.
Yeah, I was reading a thread on Twitter by a guy, Joe Straczynski, who did Babylon 5 and Sense8. And has written some movies as well and comics and a bunch of other things. And his thing was about comic book movies and TV shows. And his premise was, it's totally arguable, but, part of his premise was that the DC comic superheroes were invented a little bit earlier and they're meant to be authority figures. And, on TV, maybe that plays better than it does in movies. And then Marvel, it's these kind of counterculture and they're underdogs. And maybe that plays better in movies as a reason why Marvel's been more successful than DC in movies and vice versa on TV. I'm not sure I buy all of that, although I do buy some of that. But I do think it's interesting in the idea of trying to say, like, do we want different things from movies and TV? And I think we do. And I think this is good evidence of that because, like, you're right. It is hard to find prestige drama embraced by, a lot of people as one of the greats and good ratings and the critics love it on TV and have it be a genre show. Whereas in the movie theater, all the great high-grossing movies, all of them are fantasy, science fiction, superhero, and stuff like that. Like, people eat it up going out to the movies. But yet on TV, it seems like we want, more grounding, more interpersonal stuff, like smaller stuff. And maybe it's also just that the budgets aren't there for anything that's at a large scale. So to see, because Lord of the Rings was huge and won Best Picture, for God's sake. And yet for Game of Thrones to do this on TV is still kind of remarkable, even after all of that with Lord of the Rings.
Absolutely. I think it's just the level of accomplishment here is staggering. So I'm happy for them.
And you mentioned Battlestar Galactica, Lost, and Buffy. I would say all those shows are, making sure that you've got interpersonal human being stakes. And Game of Thrones is good, right? Like, Game of Thrones is fantasy, but it's also personal machinations between various people, and some people are laid low and have to come back, and like, you get all of those things that you would get in a Sopranos or a Breaking Bad or something like that. It's just set in this world that's got these other elements too, and that combination is, I think, enough to sort of like how Lost very slowly let in the supernatural and got people hooked on the character drama. Like, so by the time you're in, and honestly, first season of Game of Thrones, right? Like, until the end when the dragons pop up, it's not a magic show. It's a kind of fantasy medieval times show, but it's not a swords and sorcery. It's just swords.
Right.
And I think that's part of the trick too, is sort of like getting people in with the characters and then saying, oh, by the way, there are dragons.
Yes. And then later giants.
And giants
and other things,
weird other spells and stuff like that. And I think it's good. Well, I can't wait for it to be back. And I'll tell people who are looking forward to Game of Thrones as well, just a plug. I'll plug it next week too, probably, is that here at The Incomparable, we do a weekly Game of Thrones episode review podcast. Basically, after it airs, we get together and sit down. I'm on that with my friend Monty Ashley and my friend Brian Hamilton, and we and sometimes guests, and we break them down right after if we can, the episode airs. So people should check that out, and we've got like three or four seasons of those if you want to go back and dip in the archive.
Yeah, that's good. I think this year I think this year, because there's so much secrecy, I think they are only showing it to critics at like screenings.
Yeah, it sounds like they did a episode one screening today as a big promo for the show, like their PR blitz.
Yeah,
but I'm sure. Well, that would be nice if they gave advanced screenings at all, even if it was like in a movie theater the day before or something. That would be better than nothing.
Yeah.
Yes. Well, okay. That's great. I'm glad it's coming back. It's only six episodes, but it sounds like the last four of them are basically movie length. So that'll be fun. It's going to be a fun ride.
Yeah.
One more notebook from you, and then we can get to some letters. Veep. We talked about Veep last week, but then you wrote, separate from your Veep review, you wrote the "We Got to Laugh to Keep from Crying" piece, which is one of my favorite phrases. I use that all the time. You got to laugh to keep from crying, right? And you said this is one of the things that Veep gives us.
Yeah, it's. I was just trying to look for something that was as a little more personal for starters. Less than a quarter way into that column, I sort of detail everything that I've ever written about the Trump era from a TV standpoint. And, there's no There's no mystery where I stand on Trump and that. But I was just saying, okay, I'm over it. You know, like at this point, it's so corrosive. I think the Mueller report coming out was super damaging to a lot of psyches who want it to be more. We may find out that sort of depressing first response was too early, and that there is hope still, and that it'll come out and other bad things will happen to the president. And that's, wish fulfillment. But either or, it doesn't really matter. I just think at some point you people who get bogged down in this, they feel this crushing sense. And it's not just right versus left politics. I think it's if you are on this quote unquote losing side, or you have someone in power who I think is corrosive to your soul and your culture and what you want the country to be, harping on that every day and reading stuff about it is really, really a struggle for your mental health, or it can be. So this column was really basically saying, oh my God, it's time to give up. But it also happened simultaneously when the last season of Veep was coming out, and no series sends up politics better than Veep. And I think they really, really dove into the connections to the Trump era this year, whereas it was more of a funhouse mirror before. But instead of like going right after Trump, basically they're saying, hey, look, you know, the state of politics in this country is just so deplorable on both sides and for every person involved, regardless of party, and for every voter. Everybody has a thing that makes them awful. And there's joy in that because it's so funny, because nobody is spared. Everybody is made to look bad. And you can laugh literally until you're crying. It's the funniest show, I think, on television. It's the first episode to this final season was so brilliant. And so that was a jumping off point to make a bigger point about maybe, seeking out other things and then politics and making yourself happy. And that television, yes, that's a perfect escape. And I tried to say, hey, that's not just like, because I'm not a believer in escapism, like just for escapism's sake, unless you kind of needed something really quickly for your mental health. But I'm not a believer like, just go watch something stupid, because we're in a world now in platinum age of television where there's so many great offerings. You don't have to be embarrassed about taking time off from something more serious, or reading the New York Times, or digging into like all these jokes and these shows at night about Trump, what he did that day, or worse, watching Fox News or CNN or MSNBC. I was just saying there's other options for that. And I got to the point. And David Mandel, who is currently running Veep, was very, very kind to me. Not only was it a positive review, and I'm sure that's nice, but separately, he said this column, he loved this column, and that it's been something he's been trying to articulate to people in a way, and that he found that I was able to do that. Anyway, he hadn't done yet, and so I took that as a nice compliment, and I found out later that like he and Armando Iannucci and Julia Louis-Dreyfus were on a thread together talking about it, both the review and this piece, and that was heartwarming. That's kind of why you do it, I guess. So I'm happy that it's out there, and hopefully, if somebody reads it, they'll find something in there that can give them a little salvation.
That's awesome. That's very cool. I love it. I'm glad Armando Iannucci has still got enough sort of like a parent's interest in his show to be paying attention as it ends, even though he's not deeply involved with it anymore since he stepped
away. And he's a hero, so that's always good. He also said, "Just this is a not even a slight Columbo, Bob. I just wanted to say the word Columbo." He was hilarious at one of the TCA awards when Veep was getting awarded, and after the show, we were all mingling. People were mingling about different places in the ballroom, and he came up and he said, "Hey, I really love those power rankings." And awesome. I said, "Do you?" He's like, oh, yeah. And he was like serious, and we talked about it. And I was like, I went home that night thinking, I win tonight. This is great. Somebody actually likes this fake thing that we created.
before we go to letters, we should at least mention you're going to have a piece up shortly about maybe the next day or two about The Tick, which is coming back on Amazon for season 2. But it's not written and you haven't seen it, so we'll have to wait on that. But people should check out The Tick. I really loved season 1. If you haven't seen it, go back. It is, It's funny. It's a funny superhero, you know, comedy with some with a little bit of drama, but mostly just ridiculous comedy. And it's great.
Yeah. Our favorite blue superhero. And I think that I could be wrong. I don't think I'm wrong this time, but I think they're last year they divided the series in two parts. And I think that was a big mistake, but it might have been a production thing. And I think this time they're done and they're going to run all the episodes at once.
My understanding is that it was a production thing. They had lots of issues with I'm not going to say how I know this, but that they had lots of issues learning how you make a show like that, that is a special effects comedy live action thing. Hopefully this year they've learned their lesson and they're dropping the whole thing. But yeah, that was my understanding. It was more complicated than they thought. Yeah. All right. We have some letters, but let's do an ad first.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. That's what everybody tunes in for, is the ad. And our TV Talk Machine ad is Mac Weldon.
Oh, yes.
Which Welcome means back. We're going to be talking about underpants. That's right.
You refuse to ever say underwear, don't you? Because you know that if you say underpants, it's going to make me laugh.
I feel like underwear, I mean, is synonymous, but it could also mean something broader. There's like a Venn diagram, and it's like a big circle of underwear, and a little underpants isn't on the inside of it. Either way, I am wearing... Okay, Tim, I'll do it this way. I am wearing Mac Weldon underwear right now. And they also have socks that are really good. They have shirts that are really nice. I have one of their long sleeve shirts. It is super good. Undershirts, hoodies, sweatpants. Their sweatpants are awesome. I wear those when I have given up on life and just want to be comfortable. I just put on the sweatpants.
Nice.
It's one level up from pajama pants and one level down from, you know, actual pants you'd wear outside. And it's whatever it is, it's better than what you're wearing right now. They are confident in that. That's why Mac Weldon has a no questions asked return policy. If you don't like it, your first pair of underpants, just keep them. They'll refund you, no questions asked, but they're confident you're going to be super comfortable in whatever you buy. By pairing premium fabrics with meticulous attention to detail, it is great stuff that is of a higher quality noticeably. These are not the underpants you get at Target. Let's just say that. The undershirts stay tucked. The socks stay up. The waistbands don't roll. It's all got premium cotton. It's blended with natural fibers. And the website's also super easy to use. You can get in and out as quickly as possible. So be like me and just have large portions of your wardrobe made by Mac Weldon. I recommend it. And if you're worried that you might smell, might be a little smelly, they've got silver underwear and shirts. The silver kills the microbes so that it doesn't smell. That's science, people. It's science. And not only are they are good looking, but they also are good for working out, going to work, traveling, and everyday life. They perform well. It's not just about looks. It is about performance. You can get 20% off your first order with Mac Weldon, dear listener, by going to MacWeldon.com. That's MacWeldon.com. And use this code for 20% off. You have to remember the code because it's who sent you there. The code is TVTM. That's right.
That's so easy.
So easy. It couldn't be easier. And the website couldn't be easier, too. Thank you to Mac Weldon for supporting the TV Talk Machine.
Nice. And for you, well done on the Weldon.
Thank you. Well done.
Just see what I did there.
I did. I'm using my Mac, too. So it was Mac well done.
Oh, my God. Look at
what?
That.
What? All right. Here's a tweet from listener P. Just the letter P, who said, "Hey guys, I can confirm that Easy, the show we mentioned last week that you brought up, is in fact a real show. And I was glad to hear it got a third season. It's very charming, often funny, and due to the half-hour anthology format, it rarely feels dragged out. I would recommend it to fans of shows like High Maintenance." So there you go. We weren't saying anything negative about Easy. We were just saying we weren't aware it existed. That's all.
Yeah, Netflix. Hey, there's a show. Uh-huh.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Listener Patrick tweeted at us with a correction to episode 211 last time.
Oh, a correction.
He said, "Here in the 802, we would never do donuts in your yard. We would move your sap buckets to telephone poles or paint rude words on your hay bales. Donuts in the yard would be too disappointing to your mothers, who we love."
Well done.
Thank you, listener Patrick. And our listener Bakoven from Germany wrote in from the +49 saying, "Regarding American accents, we talked about understanding accents and turning on captions last time. I've never encountered something as brutal as the Baltimore accident in The Wire, especially the high-rise slang. Now that I understand that, everything is easy." Nice. So there's an example, The Wire. You've got to turn on the captioning. Maybe that's true. Let's see. I think I had another. We have some more captioning letters later, but let's go to Brandon, listener Brandon from the 301, a frequent letter writer, said, I've been thinking about Netflix's original content strategy. They seem all over the place and are buying all sorts of shows that appeal to all sorts of people. It suddenly occurred to me Netflix might be trying to be the network TV of cord cutters. Cord cutters don't watch much network TV, but there's still a place, I feel, for the solid network-style TV drama. Popcorn shows, not too artsy or high concept, just a fun show to watch for escapism, whether it's a comedy or meant to be a straightforward drama. Might this be the niche they're aiming for, the niche of not being niche? It seems like a good strategy to me. Nobody else in the streaming world is trying that at all right now. Brandon from the 301. What do you think?
Conceptually, what is the argument again?
The argument is that Netflix may be trying to be all things to all people, and as part of that is like having some shows that are broad, so that they can capture the people, you know, who have that same broad taste that they might have carted in from network TV.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah, no, I've always thought that. I mean, that's why they did Fuller House, and that's why they try things.
They tried like, One Day at a Time, although they canceled it, but they tried that. I would say, you know, we mentioned Bosch every now and then on the show on Amazon. That's Amazon trying to be. Amazon wants to be a broadly. I mean, all these channels want to be broadly popular. I mean, maybe not you know, the horror movie channel or the British interest channel, but like Amazon and Netflix and even HBO and Apple, like they all want to be have that show that's just super broadly popular that everybody wants to tune in on. And you know, Netflix wants prestige, but they totally want broad appeal. Yeah, Fuller House. Can I give you no better example, right, than Fuller House?
Absolutely.
There's I think prestige there.
No, but if it pulls in a lot of people, they're all for it, even though, like I said, ratings don't matter. But what it does is that for subscription services, it confirms to them that, like, one part of our audience that we hope to be serving, it really loves this segment, and that is validating to us, because otherwise we don't know if they're just skimming along all our various options and thinking that they're all kind of like meh. They find something that they love, so be it. If it's something that's kind of like a lower brow, that's fine by them.
Yeah. All right, that's a good one. Thank you, Brandon. Next up is Rich from the +440. Here we go. I think we're getting into Blighty. I think there's going to be accent talk. Rich says, hi guys, just listening to the latest episode of TVTM. Personally speaking, I have no problem understanding any American accent, even the thickest, drawliest Texan or the frankly baffling Boston accent. It sounds weird, but my brain has been trained from a young age on Knight Rider and the A-Team and accepts our entertainment overlords' accents without question. I have an accent-related question for you. I watched The Americans on your recommendation. Flip, an amazing series, by the way. And I'm embarrassed to admit that I had no idea that the lead, Matthew Rhys, was Welsh and grew up only 10 miles away from me. I genuinely thought he was American, not an awesome Welsh bloke. Have you ever been totally fooled by someone's accent? Spike from Buffy is another one. So convincing, I thought he was a Brit. Love to your moms. Rich from the +44.
I think the Spike from Buffy accent is fantastic.
Yeah, James Marsters is from Modesto, man. He's from Modesto.
Yeah, he totally nailed that.
Ooh.
Yeah, and Matthew Rhys. Yeah, I mean he got, in The Americans, became an American. It's such a great part. And by the way, he was also asked at times to let that Russian side of him out, which was really subtle. Change in how he pronounced things, which I think often gets missed. But yes, when you actually see him speak his native language, it's like, what? And it's great. I love that. Whereas, you know, when you watch The Wire, there's people whose foreign accents leak through. That's a problem sometimes.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. That's a good one. Hugh Laurie for me. Hugh Laurie on House.
Yeah.
I couldn't, you know, I had not seen Hugh Laurie or remembered Hugh Laurie in anything British. And that is the most, I mean, yeah, it's a generic kind of accent, but it's so good. It's really good. I could not believe it. The first time he spoke with a British accent somewhere where I was watching, I was like, what, huh? Amazing.
Yes, he does great. I will tell you the one that actually doesn't work, and it's a choice that a lot of British actors make. Okay, I'm going to space the name, but from Broadchurch and
David Tennant.
So David Tennant is a fantastic actor. When David Tennant was in, he had that weird thing where he had to go back to back. He did the season one of the British Broadchurch, and then he had to come right back and do the American spinoff of Broadchurch. And if you watch both, and I I pray that you don't watch the American version. It is horrendous. But if you're just looking to look at accents, what he's doing is trying to make an accentless American accent. Whereas if you think about Matthew Reese and the Americans, it's utterly believable that it sounds like he's from here. If you listen to David Tennant in Broadchurch, it's like you are trying to make something sound like air or vanilla. And it's not working. And worse, I think he was putting so much effort into doing that and to sound like he didn't have an accent that it actually impacted how his acting was. So that didn't really work. I mean, maybe he has a great American accent somewhere, but at least in that first season of the American version of Broadchurch, he made a big mistake, big choice mistake.
Yeah. Yep. It's too bad. He does a good fake English accent. He's Scottish, but he does a good mm-hmm. fake English yeah. accent too. Mm-hmm. But all right. Here's another one from Old Blighty. It's Clive. Of course it is, in the +44, who says, I was listening to your discussion about laugh tracks on comedy shows, and I immediately thought of MASH, broadcast here in the UK without a laugh track. But then Jason Columbo'd me, not actually a Columbo, by bringing up his MASH DVD collection. This ruined my planned email. But then regional accents. I can well understand American viewers having issues with comprehending our bizarre range of regional accents in the UK. Check out an old BBC show called Rab C. Nesbitt for the peak example in British TV, because some broad accents can even bamboozle British viewers. As for American accents on TV in the UK, it's not really a problem for viewers because US TV shows have been a staple here since the 60s and 70s. Irwin Allen shows spring to mind, Lost in Space, The Time Tunnel, plus a plethora of cop and detective shows, The Rockford Files, Columbo, Hawaii Five-0, and so on, along with many others. U.S. TV and films have been educating British viewers in all manner of American accents for half a century or more, whereas I would assume British shows only have had a fraction of the exposure on U.S. networks across the same time period. So we can understand you, but can you understand us? Love to your mothers, etc., and so forth. Clive. No, we know we can't understand you. Sorry.
No,
but it's our cultural hegemony in exporting all of these movies and TV shows is really like everybody understands the American accent. I think it's true. But I have more, Tim. I have another one. I have another +44 letter. It is Tony from West Yorkshire.
Oh,
and he says, A up, Jason and Tim, Art and Fine Fettle, yon podcast right champion and no mistake. Greetings, Jason and Tim. Hope you're well. Your podcast is most excellent. He was translating our summit. See, I can do a little. He says, I'll stop there because Jason does a great, quotes, British Dick Van Dyke style Cockney accent. Hello, governor. I'm not sure he is ready to attempt too much of a Yorkshire one, but I've seen All Creatures Great and Small, man. As I compose this email, I'm looking down on the Calder Valley, known to you as Happy Valley.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And I'm not too far from the birthplaces of the new Doctor and of Captain Picard. I'd like to link two topics from podcast 211, Brits watching newest TV, and Tim's views on great cop shows. Ah. I think Jason's correct. The overwhelming amount of US TV shows and movies aired in the UK means we in the +44 have no problem understanding American accents. Even regional accents don't seem to be too much of a problem. There don't really seem to be shows shown here with dialects that use vocabulary that is unfamiliar. However, I can't confirm Tim's view on The Wire as a great cop show, as this was the one US TV show where I literally could not understand a word. I tried turning on subtitles, but just couldn't get into it and gave up after a couple of episodes. This, despite being quite happy to watch Scandinavian shows on BBC Four, where I am totally reliant on subtitles. A much bigger problem for me lately has been the accents in Shetland, starring Douglas Henshaw. It's a great Scottish cop show, but the Shetland accent means I frequently have to jump back 30 seconds to find out what exactly was said. Give it a go. It's probably on BritBox or Acorn. Love to everybody's mothers on both sides of the Atlantic and even as far as the West Coast. Al Sithi, goodbye. Tony in West Yorkshire.
Wow, Tony, that's I'm going to give you the golf clap for that. That is very nice. And by the way, Tony is the, as my mom would say, umpteenth person to have recommended Shetland. Based after all this stuff I did on cop shows. And I have put that on my list.
It is on BritBox in the U.S.
Yes. I'm going to track it down.
Yeah, and if you don't remember Douglas Henshaw, he's the guy who fought with dinosaurs in Primeval, which is one of those not sci-fi shows that's not among the best dramas
not
of all time.
Not among the best, yes.
But there were dinosaurs, so what can you do? And Tim, that's it. That's the end of our letters. Do you have anything to Columbo me with?
I did not. I brought no Columbo-ish.
All right, well, then I guess I just have to give you the numbers. Tweet at us at TVTM or email us podcast@tvtalkmachine.com. And you could, all of this talk of accents, and yet none of these people sent an audio file. I had to read the accents myself.
Brutal.
It's terrible, terrible, terrible. So do that if you want. And if you don't, you can just write us a normal letter or send us a tweet. And we like that too. And we'll be back next week. But until then, we say to you,
goodbye, everybody. Be safe and be happy.